hurt me.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Thank you.
From singer-songwriter Dennis Harrison and members from the Songs for Justice Project, which consists of Gabe Hulen, Betty Hurst, Ted Williams, Diane Osborne, and myself, Ones Pritzker. I featured this song, When the Christians Came, as an introduction to today's focus on the colonial legacy of Father Junipero Serra. His Christian mission system caused the genocide of many Native peoples in what's now called California. Ashkwe greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Friar Junipero Serra, known as the Apostle of California, was an 18th century priest, explorer, and colonizer. He personally was responsible for the establishment of 9 Christian missions. He presided over at least 15 missions on stolen Indian land. His mission system was responsible for one of history's worst cases of genocide. In September 1988, Pope John Paul II blessed Junipero Serra with the formal Vatican pronouncement of beatification against the wishes of many indigenous peoples throughout the Americas. Wolf Mountain Native Radio is very honored to have Apache Indave brother, Mr. Harold Dick Jr., as our guest today on Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Harold and I have been friends for many years. In today's program, we discuss this colonial conquest of priest Serra and the protest against the Vatican's plan for canonizing Father Junipero Serra. Harold is a spokesperson for SOIL, still on Indian land. Soils Coalition has a campaign against the Vatican's church blessing of Junipero Serra for sainthood. This Vatican blessing of Junipero Serra is a very important issue for indigenous peoples. It exemplifies the historic role of Christianity in the conquest and oppression of non-European peoples throughout the world. To me, Christianity has been and continues to be one of the worst things to have happened to native peoples. For over 500 years, since that colonial pirate, Christopher Columbus, and subsequent conquistadors and missionaries invaded tribal peoples of the Americas, the Catholic Church has been a major force of conquest and murder of millions of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Even in modern times, Christian missionaries are still forcing their religion upon tribal communities. I have observed priests in different areas of Indian country and in the Third World being very disrespectful of native spirituality. I've seen missionaries still trying to convert Indian peoples by trying to discredit Aboriginal traditions and ceremonies. One particular example I've spoken before about on Wolf Mountain Native Radio is the U.S.-based New Tribes Mission Organization. This group has often been some of the first early contacts between indigenous peoples and the outside white world. The New Tribes Mission has a sophisticated worldwide network of outposts, complete with small airstrips and radio communications. In some instances, Third World governments sanction these missionaries. And these Third World governments' way of thinking, the missionaries are, quote, pacifying wild Indians, unquote, thereby making it easier for government and multinational companies to take control of traditional tribal homelands. European colonization and forced acceptance of Christianity or death stems from the May 4, 1493 Vatican Declaration Inter Cetera Papal Bull, delivered by Pope Alexander VI. Shawnee legal scholar and friend of mine, Mr. Stephen T. Newcomb, has researched the history of the Church and Vatican policy of conquest based upon this 1493 Inter Cetera Papal Bull. We at Yadkinishi Native Center had the honor to hear Steve's presentation on this subject at a historic 1992 conference in Powwow, co-sponsored by Radio for Peace International. This event was entitled Peace in the Planet, Native Wisdom, Native Rights, and Mother Earth. This gathering in what's now called Oregon brought together indigenous peoples from many parts of the world to sit together in council. I wish to read a portion of an essay written by Steve Newcomb that is posted on the website of the Indigenous Law Institute. Professor Newcomb is director of the Indigenous Law Institute and is a nationally recognized Native American scholar. Quote, since 1992, we at the Indigenous Law Institute have been working to publicize the truth about the history of the Inter Cetera Papal Bull delivered by Pope Alexander VI on May 4, 1493. This document, issued shortly after Columbus's first voyage to the Caribbean, expressed the Pope's earnest desire that barbarous nations be subjugated and brought to the faith itself for the spread of the Christian Empire. Earlier, such crusading Vatican bulls called for perpetual slavery of Africans by capturing, vanquishing, and subduing them, and by taking away all their possessions and property. In the year of the Columbus Quincentennial, we began a campaign to point out to the world community that these papal documents were instrumental in the injustices committed against the peoples of the Americas, Oceania, Africa, and Asia. Such papal bulls directly sanctioned colonization, the slave trade, and bloody campaigns that resulted in the deaths of millions. Scholars have correctly identified the Inter Cetera Bull as the historic cornerstone of colonialism worldwide, unquote. Father Junipero Serra was born Miguel Jose Serra at Petra on the island of Mallorca, Spain, in 1713. In 1729, at the age of 16, he entered the service of the Catholic Church and took the name Junipero Serra. In 1749, Father Serra left Cadiz, Spain, to undertake missionary work in the so-called New World, sailing to Veracruz, Mexico. From age 36 until his death at age 70 in 1884, Junipero Serra's Christianity Crusade established the following nine missions. 1769, San Diego de Alcala. 1770, San Carlos Borromeo. 1771, San Antonio de Padua. 1771, San Gabriel Archangel. 1772, San Luis Obispo de Tulsa. 1776, San Francisco de Assisis. 1776, San Juan Capistrano. 1777, Santa Clara de Assisis. In 1782, San Buenaventura. Junipero Serra was the principal architect and administrator of this 18th century mission system. They were built by Indian forced labor who were forced into Christian servitude. These missions were, in fact, concentration camps. Tens of thousands of native people died during this era, who were forced to live under Spanish colonial rule and law of the Vatican. In 1987, the Vatican campaign to make Father Serra a saint highlighted this effort by planning a papal visit to what's now called California. Today's program is my interview with Chiricahua Inde Apache brother Harold Dick Jr. from 1987. Before we listen to my conversation with Harold, I want to share with you a statement by the Still on Indian Land Coalition that Harold represents. This statement is read by Yat Kiddushi Native Center's co-director, Betty Hurst. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kenoan Wontakwasin. To all of our relations.
Santa Cruz Native American Support Group. Sisters and brothers, we are seeking your endorsement of a vigil and other associated activities which will coincide with the Pope's visit to the Carmel Mission on September 17, 1987. We are coordinating the gathering of a sacred hoop during this time to focus attention on the hidden heritage and the current situation of Native Americans of California. Considering Friar Junipero Serra's proposed sainthood, this papal visit is an important occasion that challenges all people of conscience, regardless of race or religious persuasion, to acknowledge the contributions of the California Indians who were forced to build and maintain the Spanish mission system at the cost of their cultures and their lives, and whose descendants still suffer from prejudice and abuse in our society. The principal activity of the vigil on September 17th will be a pageant of conscience to offer respect for the thousands of Indians buried beneath the Carmel Mission and to offer support for the tens of thousands of California Indians who continue to struggle for their political rights and religious freedoms, their sovereignty, and their dignity. These indigenous peoples of this land still strive to defend themselves and their families, their ancestors and their future generations, their traditions and our only Mother Earth, and they deserve our company as staunch allies. This pageant of conscience will be a prayerful gathering in which we will peacefully and imaginatively express our collective aspirations and concerns. This vigil will be neither an angry protest nor a festive celebration. This pageant will be an opportunity to honor our issues and values in a quiet, joyful way. The main focus of the vigil will be the Native Americans whose blood, sweat, and bones ennoble the soil upon which the Carmel Mission stands, and on their descendants from many regions to the north and south who will join together with us in this moment. And in keeping with the genuine concern we feel for all of our relations, all who accept this focus and who participate in this coalition will be welcome to express other aspects of our struggle as well. The political, cultural, educational, logistical, and financial aspects of this coalition work and its principal activities will be detailed in subsequent communications and meetings. Some of our particular interests and events are elaborated on an accompanying page. Also enclosed are a call to the vigil from two sisters of Notre Dame in Carmel and a report on the missions from a fourth grader in Santa Cruz. We urge you to consider both endorsing this pageant of conscience and participating in its associated activities. Please tell your friends about this event as well. I will be contacting your group by phone in the near future to assess your interest in this matter. We can decide then how we will go forward together. In solidarity, John Abalone Walsh and Harold Dick Jr. Still on Indian land, the Santa Cruz Native American Support Group Communique, a Mission Soil Coalition. The Santa Cruz Native American Support Group will be sponsoring events before, beyond the particular vigil on September 17th. There will be traditional Indian ceremonies, teach-ins and forums, cultural presentations, heritage displays, and other events in schools, churches, and communities around the Monterey Bay Area and Central Valley. On July 16th, people from the Mission Soil Coalition will be meeting with members of the U.S. Secret Service, the Vatican of Rome, the Carmel Mission Papal Team, the California Highway Patrol, and the Carmel Chief of Police to discuss our activities coinciding with the Pope John Paul's visit to the mission, our ecumenical concelebration. We shall insist that there be a brief audience with the Pope for a delegation of traditional California Indian people, that there ought to be a rectification of mission history concerning the brutality of the Spanish colonial period, and that there be a visible acknowledgement of the thousands of Indians buried in the mass grave beneath the mission and of their contributions to the development of the mission system. Also, we shall insist that our peaceful activities during the vigil on September 17th be undisturbed by the police and that a traditional Indian ceremony be allowed at the mission immediately before it is closed off by the Secret Service. The soils of the Californian missions are composed of the sweat and blood and even the bones of tens of thousands of Indian people, and these missions today are still on Indian land. There can be no reconciliation with the church until the shameful history of the mission era is suitably acknowledged. The black legend of Spanish colonial practices at the frontiers of their empire has been known throughout the world for centuries. And for the Indians of California, it remains a deep wound that has not yet been healed. Just as it is within the Catholic Church, there can be no forgiveness without penance and without repentance. Since we insist on mutual respect for religious practices with regards to Native American spirituality, we too respect the right of the Catholic Church to act as it pleases concerning its liturgy and ceremonies or on subjects of faith and morals. However, because of our commitment to the truth, we must observe that the proposed canonization of Junipero Serra, the prelate of Spanish genocide along the Pacific coast and the architect of its mission system, is a further assault on the Indian peoples of California and throughout the Americas, and that it is wildly inconsistent with the recent declarations by the Pope himself, such as his discourse with the Mapuche Indians of Chile in April of this year. While visiting the Mapuche Indian community of Temuco in southern Chile, Pope John Paul II declared in part, quote, "The Pope today from Temuco urges the Mapuche people to proudly preserve their heritage, the traditions and customs, the language and values of their people. When you defend your identity, You are not only exercising a right, you are also doing your duty. The duty of transmitting your culture to the next generation, enriching the entire Chilean nation in this manner with the values which characterize your people, love of the land, the stubborn love of liberty, and the closeness of your family unit. Be aware of the ancestral richness of your people and make them flower and bear fruit. You have often been victims of injustice and exclusion. On occasion, you yourselves have denounced the fact that unscrupulous people are using you for their own profitable ends without respect for your dignity or your rights. Love always conquers all. That love and peace which I insist do not remain inoperative, are not passive, but which make themselves manifest in initiatives, activities, and works of solidarity on behalf of your people, and in regaining what you have unjustly been deprived of, unquote.
I would like to now welcome my Ende Apache brother, Harold Dick Jr., to Wolf Mountain Native Radio.
Thank you very much, Onis. I'm very proud and honored to be here with you today. California. California is a land of legend and myth. Even it gets its name from the Spanish, and it means an island in mythology. When the Spanish came to California, it was beautiful, it was peaceful, it was Eden personified. The first thing that they did, of course, as they did everywhere they showed up, was to bring their religion with them. They brought Catholicism. I say Catholicism, and I really don't like to use the word Christianity, basically because having had the opportunity to read about the spirit of the man they call Jesus Christ, if the Spanish, if the French, if the English who came here, in all actuality, followed the spirit of the man they called Jesus Christ, none of what befell this continent, this country, and our people ever would have happened, because we all would have lived as brothers, because that's what he talked about, to live as brothers, live as sisters, live peacefully. Well, somewhere along the line, they corrupted the spirit of this man they called Jesus Christ. That's why I don't refer to it as Christianity, as in Christ-like, because they weren't, and it's really that simple. That's why I refer to it as Catholicism, which basically just means universal, and that's what they've tried to do, is take over the small little universe on which we live. One of the great proponents of this universality of thought was, I'll just call him a man, a person. I'm not going to get into the fact that he was a brown robe. Was a man called named Junipero Serra. They called him Father. I don't know why. I call my father Father. I don't call anybody else by that name, except the Creator and Father Sky. No one else who walks this earth, as far as I'm concerned, is entitled to the name Father, except for that person that I just mentioned, my father. Junipero Serra came to California with his conquistadores. He came to California to basically straighten out the heathen, to convert them to this religion called universality or Catholicism. He was from Spain. He was commissioned by the King of Spain to go to California and to start missions. The purpose of the mission was to convert the heathen. First, they had to make sure that the heathen was convertible. So they asked for pontificates, asking whether or not these people were actually human, whether or not they actually had souls. Junipero Serra and the era that he came out of was the era of the Inquisition. Junipero Serra was also a licensed inquisitioner, and he brought with him all of the fine tools that were developed in Spain. I'm just going to use Spain as the example because the Inquisition ran rampant throughout all of Europe. People are more familiar with the Spanish Inquisition, and so that's all we're going to deal with right here and now. The purpose, of course, of the Inquisition was to drive the so-called devil out of people, and it also served a very good purpose, which was to strike fear into the hearts and souls, because, yes, we have souls. We always believed in souls. We call it spirit. They call it soul. I really don't see the difference. It's just a matter of semantics. We have the Great Spirit, which is, to my people, the spirit which passes through all things. All things to us have spirit, have soul. The grass, the people that the Europeans call animals, we all have spirit. We all have soul. We are all here because of the Creator put us all here to cause the balance in which we should all live. The people who came here from over there try to separate themselves from the reality, and they live in I would call it a false sense of self-aggrandizement. They believe that they are supreme after God. Well, at least they do acknowledge that that God or the Creator is above them. But sometimes I wonder how much they assume the Creator is above them. They bring this self-aggrandizement with them, and they attempted to and succeeded in destroying vast tracts of land, vast amounts of our brothers and sisters, the four-legged, the two-winged, those who live in the water, the plants, the rocks, and last, but not really least, us, the two-legged, their closest brothers and sisters. They built a mission, and every mission in California, from San Diego to San Francisco and above, and also, you know, more inland, has a mass grave. The some of the smaller missions only have 400, 500, 600 Indians buried there, and some Spaniards, because what people have to realize is that some of the Spaniards who came here saw what was happening was wrong, and endeavored to set it right. They were instantaneously treated as bad, if not worse, than they were treating the Indians, because they felt that these people were traitors. Actually, what these people were, they were Christian. In all actuality, because they believed in the peace and the harmony and brotherhood and sisterhood of all peoples. The mission in Carmel, which is the one that I will basically deal with at this point in time, has a huge grave. It's somewhere between 2,400 and 2,600 Indians, and 14, I believe, Spaniards also buried there. It's a huge open pit grave which was covered over, and at this point in time there's a parking lot on top of this mass grave. So even at that, the spirits of these people who are buried there are restless. They feel the weight of this concrete. They feel the weight of the steel of the automobiles which they place on top of them. They're not even granted the right to, as the Anglo-European calls it, rest in peace. There is no peace, and as long as these conditions continue, the spirits of these people will know no rest. And that includes, as I said, the Spanish as well as the Indian, because they are not at rest also. Junipero Serra used every means at his disposal to make this conversion possible. He brought in troops, and he would round up, you know, these the village people who are out there. And what people have to realize about the California coastal Indians, basically, is that on top of everything else, they don't even have a warrior society. It doesn't really enter any place in their makeup that war is an essential thing for survival. They never had to deal with it. They gathered, they fished, and they lived basically, not even just basically, they lived basically, period. They lived as close to nature as is humanly possible. Their homes were made of tule, because that was not only because it was abundant, but also because it is of the earth. It's the most natural way for them to live out there. They made their boats out of tule. They made what little clothes they wore, and basically it was not much reason. Having lived out in that part of California, it's very easy to see why to go in the natural way is the best way, because the climate is perfect. I mean, winter out there is like, you know, 45 degrees as we, you know, measure temperature these days, and it rains. So what? You know, I mean, they don't know of snow, they don't know blizzard, they don't know howling winds. Yet the Spanish came over there and started building these huge buildings, you know, heavy homes, and started sitting very, very heavily on this very delicate area of land called California. They talk about the earthquakes and the shaking, and because the land there is so delicate, when you speak with the natives from that area, the Indians from there, and they go back in time to their own stories before the coming of the Spanish, and before the laying on of such heaviness, the earthquakes, which everyone fears, were basically minimal. I mean, you know, Mother Earth will always tremble and shake, and that's because she's growing and giving birth, and because she's, you know, pulling herself back together, and she's constantly nourishing both herself and all of us. But, you know, nothing like that San Francisco earthquake that took place turn of the century sometime when everything fell down. The natives there had, you know, no concept of that kind of turmoil being laid on them. But when the Spanish started putting these heavy buildings and on Californian soil, which is which has very little bedrock, which people out here know about, you know, if you build out here, you always find the bedrock, and that keeps you stable. The coastal region of California has very little bedrock, and so they put basically proportionally a very, very heavy building, even though it was adobe, on a very, very fragile, very, very fragile piece of land. Excuse me. This instantaneously had the Indians of the area suffered, because they knew instantaneously that what was going on was not a very good thing. And when they would come in and attempt to communicate to Junipero Serra and his cohorts, they were just rounded up and stuck in a pen, not so much because they didn't want to hear what they had to say, which was also true, but because this saved, you know, this man Serra and his you know, his shock troops the time from having to go out into the countryside and round them up and, you know, and drag them into the mission system. They were forced to do all of the building while their Spanish overlords sat back and basically reaped the fruits of these other people's labor. They said that these people had no system of government. Well, we all know that that's a basic lie. They had, all of us over here had basically a much better system of government than anything the Europeans have ever devised, because we had a government, which is a bad word to use, based on honesty. You know, if it was to be, then that's what you did, and we all did it together. And they said that these people had no system of agriculture. Now, that's enough to make me laugh, because the big problems they had in Europe at that point in time was total overpopulation, the problem of overfarming their land, because they didn't have the slightest idea about how to rotate their crops, how to keep certain parts of Mother Nature free and clean so that she could regenerate herself, so that the next season this part could be used and the other part could be left to regenerate herself. We did this all the time over here. They didn't know about how to, you know, plant the right crop in the right place so that it would feed the other crops next to it what was necessary to enrich the soil. And so the two crops in the same place, basically, I can deal with the basically corn and beans. and why they're planted together, because each one puts back into the soil what the other one needs, yet neither one takes out what the other one needs. That was very simple. We've known this forever. The Europeans didn't know this and proceeded to isolate these brothers and sisters of the plant people from each other. Excuse me. They said, oh, no, you have to put nothing but corn here, and nothing but beans here, nothing but squash there. And they soon discovered that the earth wasn't yielding the way it was supposed to yield. And once again, when informed by the Indians of California what they were doing or was wrong, the Indians were beaten, they were punished. When they decided that they'd had enough and they wanted to go back to where they belonged to, they would do things like cut off a foot so that they couldn't run. I mean, they couldn't work quite as hard and quite as fast as they wanted them to, but they still believe that, you know, some work is better than no work, especially if somebody else is doing it. And they had a very large workforce to deal with, because there were many, many, many small, for want of a better word to use, tribes who lived out there. And one of the things that made it very, very easy for the Spanish to control the people is the fact that you could go 10 miles, see 8 different tribes, and run across 8 different languages, so that it was almost impossible in many respects for all of these small little communities to band together, to form a very strong front, and thus, you know, push their oppressors away from them. Also, because they don't have and didn't have at that point in time warrior societies, they were really easy pickings for the Spanish. I mean, it really didn't require, the Spanish didn't have to deal very heavily with their own loss of life, because, you know, a couple of these conquistadores on their horses could round up an entire village and just drive them in. I mean, what they would call weapons, you know, the Spanish would call weapons to these people were implements for hunting. They were implements for fishing, and they were not really, you know, implements that were made for the taking of human life, which to them was absolutely appalling. That was a very, very bad thing to do. To most of us, the taking of human life is a very, very bad thing to do. You know, on occasion, it became a necessary evil for your own survival, but that's not we're not going to deal with that this evening. We're just dealing with the mission situation. The other thing that happens with the mission situation is that once the Pope decreed in his benevolence that the native peoples of California did in fact have souls, what they decided was that as opposed to taking outright the land, they said that, well, once these people become civilized, whatever that's supposed to mean, that's, you can interpret that as you see fit. I have trouble with whatever with civilization. I always thought that we were pretty civilized as far as all of that's concerned, because we treated each other in a quote civil manner. We spoke to each other directly, we spoke to each other honestly, and when we were when we were at war with each other, we knew we were at war with each other. We didn't walk up to each other, shake hands, and make friends, and then when the person turned their back, you stab them and then wipe out all of the people. That's what civilized people do. We were savages. We said, okay, well, if we're going to go at it, then for whatever reasons, you go to your side, I go to my side, and until we sit down and talk peace again, we'll have at it. But as I said, that's not the subject that we're trying to deal with this evening. And realizing the fact that the Indians in California always basically stayed in their own area also. I mean, because the tribal affiliations were so small. They were not vast, you know, tracts of land for each person, each tribe, to occupy, because there were very, very few people. In a situation like that, and because of the weather, you don't need huge amounts of game to keep you clothed. So you could survive very, very well on fish and the acorns and the plants that that they grew there, the vegetables that they grew, the tubers from the ground, the roots that they lived on. It was very, very simple, very, you know, it was an idyllic way of life. And no one even knew about the people on the other side of the hill. I'm not even dealing with huge mountains in the coastal regions of California. I'm talking about a hill, you know, 1,500, 1,100 feet high. You go on one side, down the other, and there would be another village. And these people could be as close as, you know, 2 miles, 3 miles away. Their customs would be totally different. Their language was totally different. Everything about them was totally different, which, as I said before, made it really easy for the Spanish to just put them all together and control them, because there was no unity of the people who were there. As a matter of fact, now, today, because they are called missionaries, they're more unified than they ever have been, because they have, through no fault of their own, in all actuality, at least one, if not two, common languages. And they're both languages of our oppressors. One is Spanish, and the other, they call it English. And, of course, I've been to England, and I've heard English, and really what we speak over here isn't English anymore. But that's beside the point. Anyway, and now they can communicate with each other and talk about the fact that their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, a lot of them did live in the Roman Catholic way, because it had been so long that this was the path that they walked. A lot of them were not really happy, but they forgot why they were unhappy. And in the past 15, 20 years, give or take, the resurgence has come out, has happened. It has happened on most of Indian land, from one side of this continent to the other, from the top of the North Pole, as they call it, to Tierra del Fuego. We've all come to realize here that, in all actuality, we've been tacked to the wall, and we've had enough, and we're not going to take it anymore, and all we want is what's right and what's fair. So the Mission Indians have also decided that they want what's right and what's fair. Now, one of the things that is going to come down through all of this is the fact that what's right and what's fair to the Mission Indian is the fact that the missions, at this point in time, because they have become so civilized, they've gone to school, they can read, they can write, the missions belong to them. Because this was part of the charter from Spain, was that the missions were to be held in escrow. They weren't to be owned by the Spanish. They were not to be owned by the church. They were to be held in escrow for the Indian until such time as they could govern, which they could do anyway themselves, until such time that they could till the soil, which they could do themselves. I mean, until they could do everything that they could do except by under the terms of what the Spanish considered to be the right way, all of these lands were supposed to be turned back to them. None of this has happened. And more than likely, it's not going to happen anyway. But the point is that in a lot of cases, they don't want this to happen. They don't want the missions back. They don't want, you know, the land that's there. What they want is a recognition for what has happened to them. What is wanted is the right to rebury their dead in a proper manner. What is wanted is, if it is impossible for them to be removed, to have the area of the graves, or in a lot of cases the area of the shrines, to be open to the descendants of these people who paid so dearly with their life and with their blood and with their pain, with their agony. The land should be open to their descendants so they can go in and so they can pray.
Oh, ustedes capoyate. Oh, la estela. Ustedes capoyate. Oje, la estela.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Music you heard prior to our Yat Kedichi Native American Center's program identification was a song entitled White Buffalo, featuring Robert Ree Cody and Rob Wallace with Will Clipman from Canyon Records CD, Volume 2, Voices Across the Canyon. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. I want to thank my Ndé Apache warrior brother, Mr. Harold Dick Jr., for sharing his comments today on the colonial legacy of Father Junipero Serra and the Spanish mission system. Next week in program two of our conversation, Harold, a spokesperson for Soil, still on Indian land, the coalition's campaign against the Vatican's church blessing of Junipero Serra for sainthood, will continue to share his comments. And as an honor to Harold and all Apache brothers and sisters, we shall conclude today's program with a song from Chester Knight's Standing Strong CD on Sound of America Records. The song is entitled Cochise Was a Warrior. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker, and Betty Hurst thanking you for listening to Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Aho, Kinan Wintakrasin, to all of our relations.
Cochise was a warrior, a soldier out there. The old ones tell the story of the day of the birth. History calls him a renegade, a killer and a cheat. His fight for freedom led to his defeat. I am only one man from a people beaten down. Trying hard to stay strong inside this skin so brown. But I still hear the voices of the heroes of the past. Whispering so softly in the silence of the past. Give me a call. Give me a call. Give me a call. Give me a call. Stand strong. Never fall. You can count on me. You can count on me. You must rise. Whoever felt shame or took that wintry midnight walk that nearly killed the flame. Courage all the brothers, find that spirit voice that calls you back to freedom.